1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
My birthday is round. My birthday is always not rounding. So I got a day off. We had day off in school anyway. And I got a day as a treat to go away for the day on a picnic. And when I came back that evening, they weren't going to let me go. They were saying, "We'll be phone for you," and I didn't know what was happening. And then when I came back that evening, they told me the rising was on in Dublin. And I was sent over to the volunteer hall, which was in Shear Street, to know, was there any news? My uncles couldn't leave the house. They were waiting for news from Dublin to go on the rising, to join the troops for the rising. And there was no word from Dublin. So that's why Cork never was on the rising, was in Dublin for the rising, because that was cancelled a couple of days beforehand, and the word didn't come through in time for them to go out and fight. Then the rising took place in Dublin, and then the week after the rising there were a lot of arrests and a lot of men shot. James Connolly was the leader of the Labour Party, and he was taken out. He was strapped to a chair. He was shot in the leg during the rising or something, and the wound was never attended to, and he got gangrene, which meant that it was poisoned, and he would have had to lose his leg anyway. But he was shot for his part in the rising, and they strapped him to a chair, and he couldn't stand like all the other men, so they took him out in the chair and they shot him. British Army shot him. They shot Tom Clark and Sean McDermott, who I met a couple of months before the rising here in Limerick, and of course Patrick Pearce and all the signatories. They were all shot that week in the rising. They were taken out and shot, and then the civil war went on, and over the years, and eventually they came with the British to give us a free state, what they had been fighting for over the years, and then went on from there with the free state with the De Valera and splitting the government, and Michael Collins.
Yes, came on. Say about Michael Collins as well. Yeah,
Michael Collins was in it then. Michael Collins was the man that was sent over to London to sign the treaty.
Yeah.
And Michael Collins knew there were no guns in the country, that the men had nothing, they were down, and that meant that the British government said if they didn't sign the treaty, it was open war with the military, and there was no military here in Ireland, only the ordinary men in the trained military, and they had no guns, so he signed the treaty. De Valera should have signed the treaty. He didn't do it. He sent Collins, and Collins knew when he was going. He said he was signing his death warrant, because he knew
that he would get shot.
The people wouldn't agree. That's what caused the split in the country. That's why there was a Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael people who were for the treaty.
But you knew Michael Collins as well?
Oh, I did. I knew Michael Collins as well. Then I met Michael Collins. Well, we met him a few times because we didn't know he was Michael Collins at all, because we used to know him that time as Mr. White. When he called, Mr. White called, and Mr. White said this, and Mr. White left a message, and that kind of thing. But then when I did know him, I met him, of course, afterwards, all right. The last time I met Michael Collins was the day he made a speech in Cork when the treaty was signed. People were like you now and your brothers. One brother wanted the treaty and one brother wouldn't like the treaty. You know, like you said now, and the boys. And I had two brothers, so of course one was for the treaty, one was against the treaty, one wanted. But however, Mikey Collins came to Cork that day to speak to the people of Cork and explain why he signed for the treaty. And he had a massive turnout in Cork. People, every walk of life turned out. But of course, a few of the people, anti-treaty people, turned out as well and tried to break up the meeting. But that people that day, people who were against the treaty that day and saw what happened, went up and signed on the army with Michael Collins. That was the first your uncle, he'd be your granduncle.
Yeah.
Was one of the first signatories to Michael Collins when he was starting the army, when he was getting on the army, making up the army in Ireland at that time. So, two of them joined that day, went up on the platform and gave their names to join the army that day. And I was speaking to Mike Collins that day myself, that's the last time I met him. He took my diary, that was the day he took my diary,
yeah.
My autograph book.
And you got that book back now?
I never got it. Never got it back. He took it, he was busy, they were shouting all round him and he was busy and excited, and he just cut it and put it into his pocket and said, look, I'll write in this when I have time and I'll leave it in the office in the hotel and you collect it there. And when I went to collect it, it wasn't there. Somebody else got it. And it was a pity because they were all autographs in it. Debs of everyone was in it.
You had Eamon de Valera.
I never got it.
Yeah, and what were your connections with Countess Shmakovich then?
Then the war, of course, when the treaty was signed, and then before the treaty, of course, it was then before the treaty, Countess Markovic was in jail by the British Army that time, because she was a member of the Citizen Army in Dublin, and she was head of the Citizen Army. She was in jail in Cork, in the women's jail. And I was a member of the Citizen Army at that time. It was like the Girl Guides,
yeah.
Normally, you know, as a member of the Citizen Army.
Mm.
And I was asked to go. She used to get her lunch every day because she was a countess. She didn't have to have the military food.
Mm.
And her lunch was allowed to be sent into her every day. So I used to cook the food in a house near the jail and take it over, hand it to the warder, hand the tray and collect the trays, bring it back again. And then she asked me for me to visit her.
Mm.
And she was allowed to visit once a month, I think, or two visits in a month. And I was asked, she was asked to have me being on one of the visits. So I visited her in Cork Jail while she was there.
Mm.
So that was that part of it.
Yeah. What about Tyke Barry as well now?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I lived with Tyke Barry, of course. We were orphans. We lived with Tyke Barry and his brother, Paddy Barry. We used to call him Tim, because he's Uncle Tim to us. But until he changed to Tyke.
Tyke was your uncle?
Hmm?
Tyke was your uncle?
He was my uncle, my mother's brother. We lived with him and my brother. We lived with him all the time. But when my mother died, of course, they took charge of us at that time and they educated us and sent us to school and all that. And he was a journalist and he used to write for the Skibbereen. That's where he and Michael Collins were very friendly. Michael Collins was from Clonakilty and he used to write for the Skibbereen Eagle, which was a paper down there. He wrote for the Skibbereen Eagle and he used to write for a couple of other papers in Cork at the time, and he used to write the speeches for them and report their speeches and add a bit here and there, added to it. And he was put in prison then himself. He was in prison a couple of times for writing seditious articles.
Mm.
And he was in Cork Jail first for about a year. And then he was out unconditionally. One Sunday, he was just walked in home. He was left out of jail. Nobody knew he was out. And he went around to the corner and came in home. We didn't know. He was about 12 months in jail at that time. in the jail in Cork, and we used to go up on a Sunday evening, or not even, mostly Sunday evening, and he'd be up in the window in the jail, and he used to wave his handkerchief out of jail. And we used to stand just where Michael's and Noreen's house is there, you know, mm-hmm. the jail. There was a gas lamp there, and we used to stand there every Sunday and wave up to him. And there was a warder in the jail at the time who was very, very good to the prisoners. His name was Mitchell. He married a Belfast Protestant. She became a Catholic to marry him. And that, at that time, Protestant Belfast is black now, but it was jet black at that time. And of course, she never could get back to there. But he was very good to my uncle when he was in jail. He used to take in the papers at night when he'd be on duty. Or we could bake a cake and a couple of scones and send it over to him, and he'd take them in at night to them. I suppose he used to do it for the others as well, but he used to do it for us. And somebody told him, and he was sacked like that, without a pension, with nothing. And those people hadn't a penny. He had three lovely little girls. And I remember one Christmas Eve, when I was married, Paddy Barry and Tyke, when he was alive, was very good to them. And the simple reason that they belonged to the Vincent de Paul, and they belonged to, not so much the Vincent de Paul, but they had a fund at that time for volunteers and things like that. And they used to kind of see after them a little bit. But Tiger died then, of course, in the meantime.
Tell us about Tiger's death.
He was arrested then, and he was in Ballykindler camp. That's up in the north. He was transferred from, I don't know, was it Spike Island? Was he in Spike Island? No, he was sort of transferred up there anyway to Ballykindler camp. And the signing of the treaty was coming on at the time. They were negotiating the treaty, and they were letting, because to show that they were genuine about it, they were allowing the prisoners out, some of them. They'd allow maybe 12 or 14 of them, maybe 20 of them, I don't know how many, out for a fortnight. And when that fortnight was up, they came back and they let another crowd out, you see. But they didn't meet each other in the meantime. The people coming back and didn't meet the people that were going out, you know. And of course they had barbed wire all over the place and that sort of thing. And his friend was going out on parole. And when he'd come back, Tide was going out, so they wouldn't go to meet again for a month anyway, for a while at that time. And they were to go down to this barbed wire paling they had, to wave the fellas going out at a distance. And there was an upturned bucket there, it was an old bucket, and he upturned the bucket and he stood on the bucket up over the men to wave out. And the sentry, an 18-year-old sentry, shot him through the heart. One shot, and he dropped in front of all his men there. They said he was trying to escape, but that was squashed. That was only talk at the time, that they were trying to work it out. The talk was on about the treaty. It nearly fell through over that. Mm-hmm. That was the week. That was on the 21st of November, and the treaty was signed 10 days afterwards. The talks were on at the time. There was big, big rumpus about that at the time, because the British Army tried to make out that he was trying to escape, but they proved without doubt that he wasn't. He was a left-hander, his hand was up, and he got one shot only. His glasses, I don't know what happened to his glasses, we had his glasses with the blood on them. They were sent back to us afterwards. Just shot, one shot, and he fell dead with him. Next to Terence McSweeney, who was the mayor of Cork, that was the biggest funeral that was ever held in Cork. With his funeral after there.
And did you know Terence McSweeney as well?
Oh, Terence McSweeney lived near us at home. he lived near us, quite near us, and Mary McSweeney, I used to visit their house, Mary McSweeney, his sisters, and Anne McSweeney, they had a school, they had St. Enda's in Cork, they had a private school in Cork, but I used to visit up there to them, and they had, Terence McSweeney, they only had one daughter, he married Murphy's Brewery, she was one of Murphy's Brewery. You know who comes on there in the show? Arthur Murphy, that comes on there on Saturday night, reading the letters. He'd be a relation of hers now, of the Murphy. And that wasn't considered a match, you know. She was away in different locality, but she was, of course, the love match with them. But the sisters were, his sisters too were older and were, I mean, he was the only one they had, you see. And this, but he was on hunger strike, of course. He went on hunger strike at the time, because that's when he was killed, all right. Then there was, previous to him was Tomás McCurtain, who was the mayor of Cork. And there were so many policemen being shot at that time, like something like what's happening now, the, you know, shooting of them, that they threatened they would shoot someone in return. The constabulary, they used to go out, and I nearly missed that. I was coming home, I used to come home, Pope's Quay at night. It was a straight line from town. My friend lived where, if ever you go down there now, where in Merchant's Quay, where the, I think the bus station is still there. I haven't been out that open. But, they have a big complex made of that place, you know, all of that block around there. But she used to live there, and I lived the other direction. I used to go up the quay, up Pope's Quay. And usually when I'd be going home at night like that, I'd meet the police, used to go out, and maybe 8 of them, 2 together, and they had their rifles and everything, and they'd march, and they'd take up their positions all the way around. But they'd go down Pope's Quay, and just outside then the church there in Pope's Quay, I always couldn't any time myself going home, you know, with them coming down. I don't know why I passed that night, or how it was that I didn't meet them that night, whether I was earlier, I must have been too early or something, but I was only past that about 10 minutes when the one of them was shot there, he was shot outside, and they went straight from there down, and Tomás McCurtain lived in Blackpool, just there, Blackpool Bridge as you come in. He lived there with his wife and family, they had a small baby, they had children at the time, and small baby, brought him out and shot him outside the door. They shot him dead in front of his wife and family. The police did that in reprisal for the shooting, which I only missed. And the thing is, you know, Terence McSweeney became mayor after that. After, automatically became mayor after that. He was in hunger strike, and they let him die in Brixton. And he was funeral brought home to Cork that time. And Tiger's funeral was brought afterwards there.
And they're all buried in a special plot
There is a special plot out in St. Finbarr's Cathedral. Like, something like what they have in Glasnevin in Dublin, a political plot there.
Now tell us, the first time you came to Limerick.
Yes, that was in 1915.
Oh yes, back again.
And that would be 1915. I'd say it must have been about September in 1915. I don't know the exact date, you know, but I judge, thinking back, it must be about 15, because about September, they were coming up for the march past. This was before the rising. They were trying to get to gauge how many they had from the different countries, who was really available for this, for the rising at the time. And they had Tom Clark and Sean McDermott, down here in Limerick. They were down, they brought me with them because they couldn't leave me at home. I was the only one, the only girl, and the boys were with the piano. Tig was with the army. He was with the army and he was a journalist as well. So they brought me, they handed me over to somebody down just behind the Franciscan Church, almost now where the statue of Tom Clark is, down the steps there. I was waiting there to be collected. And Tom Clark and Sean McDermott were talking to my uncle there. And I was introduced to them as a little girl, of course, I mean, Ty's niece. And I was collected from there. Now, it was my first time in Limerick, I didn't know anything about Limerick. I don't even remember where we were taken to. I was taken to a house and kept there for the day and had my dinner. And they saw after me, they brought me back to the station in the evening. And when we came down onto Davis Street, there, Davis Street, the place in front of the station,
mm-hmm.
It was black with people waving Union Jacks, and all along Parnell Street. And I remember, I told them, a boy and a girl, I don't ever know the name, nor I still never have found out their names. And the boy said, well, we can't take her in there. And they brought me back again to the house and told them, and the mother was there, and whoever she was, and she sent one of them away anyway, and he came back and he said, yes, I was brought to, you know where the signal, they had the signals, I was brought up there, and the signalman allowed them to bring me down the railway line. That's how I got into the station. And when I was in the station, I could see them volunteers coming, some covered in blood, where they were after being struck with stones and bottles by their people in Limerick at the time. But of course, the war was on. They were getting war separation allowances, and the army, they had no use for the army at all. Nobody had used much for the volunteers until 1916, until after that. It was after that that people, and I think mostly after that, the shooting of the men, because morning after morning you'd hear the paper come out and somebody was shot, and you know, they brought them out. It was only then that people began to take notices, and it was only then the Irish people won anything, because if they hadn't done the shooting that morning, it wouldn't have ended like that at all.
What about the shooting of Maggie Collins in Bain na Bloor? What do you remember of that?
Very little of that, because I was down in, I used to go down to Crossaden with the Murphys, Auntie Mae Murphy, with the girls, and spend my summer below with them, nothing else to do, stay down there. And I remember sitting up on the hill there one evening and seeing the Innisfallon going out, and I never knew that Mike Collins was dead at that time, because the bridges were down, you see, when they took over the country. There were no bridges. There were no roads. There was nothing. And when we were going out to Ringabella for our holidays like that, Fountainstown was across the ferry, and the ferry at times would be the width of the road outside, but it was steep. It was steep enough to take a boat across. You used to go across. And if you wanted a loaf of bread, you watched the van man coming at the other side, and you got your boat over for your loaf of bread if you were lucky. If not, if you knew someone over, they'd take an extra loaf for you. There was no bridge in the city anywhere, or in the county. The bridges were gone. They were all blown down. And you just had to go. That's the way you got around with everything. So that I knew very little about that, because the boys were in the army at the time, and you didn't know how things were going. When I was really out of things at that stage. Until after. We used to go out to Ballingeary every year for our Irish. I mean, I never had learned a word of Irish there, but we used to stay at a house there, Sweeney's was the name, to the farmhouse. De Valera used to go there. Pierce Beasley, I met all those out there. Mary McSweeney and her sister used to go there. We used to go there in the summertime. Then they had a loft made out to Where the whole of people would sleep in.
Hey, a barn?
What?
A barn?
It was more than a barn. You went up your steps to it and you had your loft. Like
an attic. Like an attic?
It was a barn.
Yeah.
You know what
a
country
mm-hmm.
barn is.
Right.
But beds were all up there. A dormitory.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the men all slept up there. But the women slept in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to stay, they used to cook their own foods and had their own meal and flour and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody went there. Everyone, there was anyone.
Mm-hmm. And it was all Irish?
All Irish while they were there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how old it was. But then we used to go there for a month in the summertime, and it was great. You met every night, Peter Spearsley, and who else used to be there at the time? I remember one thing about Peter Spearsley. He'd have a sing-song at night then or something, and I used to sing The Croppy Boy. That was my favourite at that time.
And wouldn't you give us a verse of The Croppy Boy now, Therese?
Yeah, I wouldn't. And I remember Peter Spearsley saying, it's funny now how you remember those little bits and pieces. There's one line of it, I love my country above my king, above the king. And I said, I love my country above my king. And Peter said, Matter. When you sing that again, it's above your country, not your king.
mm-hmm. Very good.
You know, I always remember mm-hmm. that's the sort of living we had,
mm-hmm.
you know, with people, that you go through that and you don't think anything. It's only afterwards you kind of realize the people that you really were with and up and down with. I can't think of some of them. There was another there, and I don't know what he was doing after. La Ross O'Brien, he was something before, I can't remember what he did. He used to be up out in Ballingarry too, and lots of people, the Condlins, a lot of people, friends of Tighe's and that. They were all grown up people now. We were like Cullum now at that stage, you know, that you just knew them and they meant nothing to you at the time, just they were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Memories, any other little memories of it, of that time?
No, I can't think of anything at them at the moment. Of course, Devilleri used to be down, and then there was a splitting between a lot of them again.
Right.
You know, another person used to be up to be there. It was not Gary Fitzgerald. What was his name? He died about a month before Michael Collins was killed. Arthur Griffith. Yeah. He was another. He used to be there. At the time,